Welcome to the Speaker's Corner Show. My name is Heiko Koo. Show broadcast every Friday on Resonance FM 104.4. You can come down to Speaker's Corner and join us any Sunday between noon and dusk. Alternatively, you can visit our website at speakerscorner.net. This week's show is an interview with Jan, one of the older generation at Speaker's Corner, and one of our unsung heroes in our midst.
Yeah, what's your name and how long have you been living in England?
My name is Jan. I live in England for 61 years.
And you told me a few days ago that you come from Poland originally?
Yes, Warsaw, yeah. Yes.
And when you were a young kid, the Nazis attacked Poland.
That's right.
And took over your country. And you participated in...
In the underground, but not straight away, because I was only 11 years old. After 2 years of occupation, I was 13.
And your father was involved in the underground, or...?
My father was involved, but as I told you before, he was a communist. So there was two undergrounds in Poland. There was a communist and the non-communist. I was in the non-one, see? The land army, they call it, you know, the home army, right? I was in that.
So what did it involve? How did you get involved in it?
Well, I get involved. We used to cut the telephone lines, right? Sometimes even blow up the tracks, the railway tracks, you know? That's where we run. Whenever we see the lorry on the street, push some oil or petrol, so crack in the exhaust, you know? German lorry. Or slash the tire with the sharp knife, you know, that sort of thing. Write the slug on the walls, you know, anti-German, that sort of thing, you know, yeah.
And how did you get involved? I mean, did someone come to you, or did you meet other people? Or?
Well, I knew other people from before the war, because I was in the scout movement, right, you know. And this scout movement, most of the, you know, companies were ex-scout movement, like, you know, all young boys, right? So that's what involved for about, what, 1943, about a year, and then the uprising broke out, right, which I took part in it.
So what happened during the uprising?
Well, I was shot during the uprising. I got a bullet from the back. Come out here, you can see. And it was the 15th of September, 1944. Actually, the fighting ended for me because my left hand, you know, was like that. All through the years, I managed to
get working here.
There was no medical help then, see, so probably it was now what happened, probably the nerves was cut in here somewhere and it affected my left side, you know. But, you know.
And when the uprising happened, what was the mood within the population?
The first few days, there was all population used to be with us, you know, they give us everything. And then when the Germans start bombing, you know, dropping half a ton of bombs on the houses, you know, people start, those who take part, they didn't call us bandits, but they wasn't very pleased, you know, the civilian population, like, you know. So, as I say, to me it finished after 2 weeks, because I still took part, but not as the fighting as such, but, you know, taking on the barricade food, water, them sometimes sitting, you know, watching when the other were tired, you know, that sort of thing. See? And then after the 61 days struggle, we were all shifted to Germany to the prisoner of war camps.
How is it they captured everybody then?
Well, the camps, there wasn't enough to die, eating wise, you know. And it was, too much to die, not enough to live, let's put it that way. We got a soap.
I was asking. How did everybody surrender, or did they?
Yes, it was surrender. Yeah, surrender after 61 days, right?
And what camp were you sent to?
I was sent to Stalag 8B in Sandbostel, near Bremerhaven. Yeah.
And what was the condition? Describe me the condition of the camp. What was it like?
We were all living in the barracks, you know, 15 or 20 of us, you know, in separate rooms. And the first few months was nothing because we didn't get anything from the Red Cross, right? Now after that, we used to have one Red Cross parcel a month that helped, you know. There was some cigarettes, chocolates, you know, some food, you know, that helped a little bit, right? And then when the ally was coming from the west, they shift us all to Lübeck, you know, and there we were liberated by the English army. You know?
Yeah. And how long were you there then?
7 months. From October 1944 till May 10th of May, say.
What's the routine in the camp?
Well, the routine, there was an entretien every morning.
It was?
Entretien, you know. Yeah. And head counts, you know, if anybody escaped. Those who want could go to the work outside, but not many, you know, freiwillige. And that's all. Yeah. When we come out of it, almost like half skeleton, you know. Then it's, you know, we start be getting food, you know, raining. And that was the war for me. Okay.
And in the camps themselves, how many people in the camp as a whole?
Well, in the fall, there was a section of Russian, right? They were separate from us, a section of us, and a section of the prisoner from 1939 from the Polish army, you know. And also there were some English, you know. Not in the Sandbostel, because we weren't first sent to the Lambsdorff camp in Upper Silesia. There was an English, you know, prisoner as well, right? And then from the Lambsdorff, we will shift to Sandbostel.
So immediately after the war then? Which were British arrived, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Immediately after the war, they shift us from the Lübeck camp, which was mostly over there. In this camp was French prisoners, you know, from the 1940 campaign. And of course, they all gone back to France. And for us, they shift us from the camp, and my company was three troops. Like, you know, we were allocated about 20 miles of Lübeck. They throw out the German farmers and put us in the summer of 1945, from May to about October, right? We were sitting there doing nothing but eating, you know, listening to the radio, you know, and all that sort of thing. And also they give us some arm training, the English, you know, because not far on the on the one not far from the village there was a regiment of British artillery stay, and they come to us, train us with the shooting, the Bren gun, a Sten gun, the rifle, the 302 Enfield, right? That's what they done, because as I tell you before, they think that it will go against the Russia, you know. So all the young men.
Oh, they wanted to prepare a Polish army.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they will keep it up after third Polish corps, you know. Right. So from these villages, we were sent again to Hamburg, a camp called Grinhof Tesperhude, right. And over there, all winter from 45 to 46, and then they shift us again to Lübeck, right? To guard the British installation, right? And in that Lübeck, we were also about 4 or 5 months, and we were all over the place, right? They shifting us, you know, from one to the other. Wendorf, that was nearly Bergedorf or Hamburg. Then in Hamburg itself, right? Then in Hanover, then in Braunschweig, a few months at the time. The last German town I was what is it called? Right up the north. Minden.
Right.
Yeah. And from there we went to Holland, to Hook of Holland. That was in 1948.
What was the attitude of the Polish soldiers towards the idea that the British had of creating a new army to fight the Russians?
Yeah, well, the we all believed that, even me, who is now 100% vice versa.
Right,
no?
Right.
Yeah, that's why I didn't return to Poland.
Right,
see?
Right.
Because of the stimulation and the brainwash, you know, don't go there, the communists. And when I came to England, I start thinking then, you know, it wasn't like that, you know. That's why I am now 100% Marxist.
And your father, what happened to him?
My father, unfortunately, he died relatively young. At the age of 53, he died in 47.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And you said...
He
was a communist.
He was a communist, yeah.
When did he join and what...
He joined in the 20s. Oh, he pushed me all sort of books, you know. I've read then, but he joined in the 20s, and as I tell you, last Thursday it was here in the university. He was arrested for singing "International" on the street of Wars. Mm. Spent 6 months in jail.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be free Poland then, you know.
Yeah. And what was it like in is Piłsudski's Poland then? Yeah,
yeah, well, Piłsudski was dead because he died in 35. And the reign who took over from Piłsudski was Edward Śmigły Ritz, another general, you know. He was a Führer. Yeah. And, I mean, even the Free Poland, some people are good, but I can remember I was hungry as a boy in that Free Poland, you know. I mean, maybe you can't blame that on the state, maybe it's my parents, you know, who probably, because there was four of us, you know. All together, they produced six children, two of them die, and four of us live, I am living up to now, and one of my sister living in Warsaw, and all the rest is dead now.
And how did you end up in England?
Well,
how did you end up in England?
How did I end up
here?
Yeah, well, as I tell you before, we went to Holland, and from Hook of Holland, we sailed to Harwich. And from there to Yorkshire, there was a transit camp. The only two jobs was available to us was a farm or a mine, right? So they were very short-handed then. So I chose up the farm, right? And I worked on the farm for 2 years, right? After 2 years, you couldn't pick up another job, but have to stay 2 years on the farm, you know? So in 1951, I left the farms and went to the factory. The factory called Plessy, doing the...
Oh yeah, big factory.
Yeah, aircraft components, you know. And over there, I worked for about, 2 years, and learned to operate the lathe, you know, and I was doing that. Then I was for a few months in the locomotive factory in Swindon, right? And then I come to London in 52, and that's where I started.
Was there any trade union organization at that time within the
factory?
Yeah,
yeah, there was a trade union. You know, not very strong, but there was. Yeah, there was a trade union. The biggest trade union was when I was already working in London, in Acton Park Royal. It was a place called Srotax, also manufacturing the aircraft components, you know. That was the biggest. We went on strike nearly enough every month. Yeah, I was a shop steward then.
Right.
Because I already inclined to be a Marxist.
And when was that?
That was in 1968, 1969. I worked.
So it was quite a militant mood within.
That's
the
workforce, right. Yeah.
How did that reflect itself? What sort of issues did you go on strike on?
Well. If they try to, sometimes they try to cut the wages, you know. Sometimes they try to cut the tea break, right? They say, well, you can have a tea break, but you will be deducted 20 minutes every day of your pay. So we went on strike.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we won, some of them, you know. They threatened us with the police, you know. But they didn't do it, you know. Then eventually it closed down, and I was redundant for the first time in England. And I work in another factory here in Edgware Road, called Palmer's Aero Product. I worked there for 5 years. Then we were probably, you say you work on the buses, who else?
Conductor.
Conductor. And when I was redundant from that Palmer Aero, I went to London Transport. I went to Griffith's house in. And first of all, I got no training to be a mechanic or anything like that. I started as a bus cleaner, right? Then they suggested to me, well, you got an engineering background, how would you like to 6 months training as a bus mechanic? All right. So they trained me and I worked for 19 years till I got, well, I was nearing my pension, you know, but it was still a year to go, you know. And they privatized and we all got payoff, right? And since then I work in some restaurants, you know, like that.
Yeah.
I worked till I was about, 75, yeah.
And in Poland, have you been back and forth to Poland over the years, all the time?
Yeah, not all the time. The first time after the war, we went with my kids, because I was married and got two girls, in 1964, by car. Yeah, we went there. And then...
And what were things like then?
Well, the things like that was good. I say good because I was in Warsaw. I went to Krakow, you know, and the other places. But the shops were full and everything you can buy, you know. Yeah, that was in 64. Then we were again in 71. It was still good, you know. People could buy anything, you know. And then when it started in mid-70s, when Gerek, he was the prime minister there, I believe so, they persuade him to get the loan from the West, right? Well, as a country, you're obliged to repay that, right? So what he do? Poland was destroyed during the war, you know, you can say Warsaw was destroyed 85%, right? So rebuilding that and repaying the loan, then, you know, it starts getting shortages, you know. And I do believe, I don't know for sure, but I do believe that all this crisis in the 80s was created by the speculator, you know, who were probably paid by the Americans, right? Like bribe-like, you know. So people who were in charge of the distribution, you know, didn't direct the food where they're supposed to direct, but directed to another places or sell it on a black market. That's what it was. That's what I believe.
And over the years, how did people you know in Poland, what was their attitude towards the regime? Let's say in the 60s, what was the attitude that people had when you first went 64?
Well...
Were people positive about the regime? Did they hate it? Did they?
Well, they didn't hate it, but nobody grumbled because, as I said, there was plenty to eat, you know, you can buy, everybody got work. And, well, the Poles always got hated the Russian, you know. That was ever since 18th century, you know, when Poland were partitioned between Austria, Germany, Prussia was then, you know, and Russia. So the hate was always there, like, you know. So to that extent that in the 80s, then, well, I do believe that all the jokes and against the anti-Russian, you know, was coming from the Radio Free Europe, you know, in Munich, right? Because they say there was a saying, right? Why we haven't got nothing in the shop? Because they say when the train go east, they say miasto sawo, miasto sawo, which means speck and fly, speck and fly. And when it come back, it was nitrabo, nitrabo, nitrabo. It's mean nothing, nothing, nothing. It wasn't like that, you know. I don't believe when you think Poland there was mainly agriculture country, you know, before the war and after the war as well. So they didn't produce any less than now. And why is everything you can buy in the shops now? And the problem is now you can buy everything, but you have no money. See? That's the problem. No.
And nowadays, what's the attitude of family, friends? When did you last go back?
Well, last year, I was for a month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my family, I've told you before, they're very, very, very capitalist, you know. I am the only one, you know, who always argue with them, you know. You don't know what you've done, you know. By reverting to the capitalists, you know. And I think they start realizing it now. They do, you know. That's why I ask you for the addresses of these comrades in Poland. Mm-hmm. When I see them, see what maybe I can help something, you know.
And how do you mean that people maybe think now? How do you mean? What indicates to you that people are...
Well, it indicates to me the majority of people would like the old times to come back. Mm. Right. Majority. Right. Not
in,
my
in
family.
In what way, though? What sort of thing, concretely?
Well, as you say here, everything privatized, nationalized, you know, the heavy industry. Because they do now, same as the water in Poland. I was talking here to the two blocks of Ella. That is privatized. And if you don't pay within, well, if I sent you a bill, three bills a year, if you don't pay within 2 weeks, water is closed. Yeah. I mean, that's nonsense. Water, which every living thing on this earth needs to have, right? Privatize. It's not enough if you, well, you have to pay something for the maintenance, you know, and but on top of that, you have to pay the shareholders, right? And that's why it's more expensive.
Mm, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are we done? 22. A few more we'll get them. Okay, and in the 80s, did you go back then?
Yeah. I went. Four times in the 80s, yeah.
Okay, and what was the attitude then? What was the
oh, the attitude was
psychology or the conditions?
Already they all blame, you know, when they introduced that martial law. General Jaruzelski was then a premier, you know.
Yeah.
And it was, I believe, when was it? In 81?
81, yeah.
81, yeah. I went in 82. So everything, it's a bloody Russian. Nothing but Russian, you know. And he told people of Poland that if he wouldn't introduce that law, it would probably worse, because the Soviets got about 2 or 3 divisions in Poland, you know, and they could crush it, you know, and they won it, you know. So then everybody was, you know, looking to the West, that the West, they will help us, you know, and all that sort of thing. And as I tell you before, I do believe that Jan Paweł II, right, or John Paul, you know, in English, he wasn't elected because he was very, very, you know, saint or clever. He was a clever man. But he was elected because he was Pole, right? And Poland then was 97% Catholics, and 90% of them were fanatics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was elected. That wasn't enough. So they found Lech Wałęsa, right? And he got a big yap, right? And everybody say Wałęsa, right? That wasn't enough too, see? So in the end, it sort out itself, right? Yeah, you know, everybody, the Soviet Union collapsed, so was Poland, and everything. You know?
What would you say to a young person listening to this or seeing this, what would you say would be the lesson from all of your experience in life about what type of world there should be?
Well, I would say the world should be everything big, every heavy industry, utility should be run by people. First thing.
And why? What should happen then?
Well, everyone will be more equal, and every prices will be cheaper, right? Everything. I know, because I know gas was cheaper, electricity was cheaper, water was cheaper before the privatized. Simple as that. And I do believe everybody will be more happy, you know, not running around, you know, money, profit. Profit should be regarded as a dirty word, right? Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Okay. Right. Nie nam wyglądać z miłowania, z wyroków carskich boskich spraw. Z własnego prawa bierz nadanie i z własnej woli sam się zbaw. Przeszłości świat dłoń nasza zmiata, przed ciosem niechaj tyran drży. My z posad ruszym bryłę świata, dziś niczem, jutro wszystkiem my. Bój to będzie ostatni, krwawy skończy się trud, gdy związek nasz bratni ogarnie ludzki ród.
That's it. Lovely.
That was Jan from Poland, who'd been living in England for 61 years. And that was the Speaker's Corner show for this week. Catch our show every Friday, same time, same place. Visit our website, speakerscorner.net, or come down to Speaker's Corner any Sunday afternoon and join us between noon and dusk.